Lords of Limited is proud to be brought to you in part by StarCityGames.com. Not only are they the home of the top content and coverage on the web, they're also the world's largest independent retailer for Magic the Gathering singles and supplies. For more information, visit StarCityGames.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. My name is Ben Warney, and joining me on the line is Ethan Sachs. Ethan, it feels like I just talked to you a couple days ago.
You know, it's funny you should mention that because I did just talk to you a couple days ago. We're recording just a few days after we recorded with Ryan, and I gotta say, Ben, I'm not feeling confident that we're gonna top that episode.
That was a darn good episode, but fortunately, we get to talk about Cube this week, which is absolute gasoline.
Yeah, wait, aren't we supposed to rename our podcast Sultans of Standard this week because you're playing in the mocks?
We could do that, but that seems like false advertising.
And we could just talk about black-green midrange or whatever deck you're playing.
Yeah, I'm going to play some black-green midrange. I've jammed lots of best-of-one games on Arena, if that counts as practice. I've played zero sideboarded games with black-green. I have a sideboard guide, and I'm going to go run, give it my best effort, and probably scrub out within a few rounds and get up to my brother's for Christmas.
Great, that's win-win for you.
Yeah, I'm only planning on not going up there if I'm like 6-0 or 7-0 or something like that, which I doubt it's going to happen.
Nice. So yeah, we are recording on the eve of Holiday Cube dropping on Magic Online, but this will be released many days after, so we'll have gotten a good number of reps in. Cube is something that's very near and dear to both of our hearts, Ben.
It really is. I am looking forward to diving into these Cube packs with you.
Yeah, for sure. So we are going to sort of do the 12 picks of Cubesmas, as we've dubbed it for this week, and take a look at a few drafts from the last iteration of the Holiday Cube, go 12 picks deep on them, talk about a lot of cards, a lot of archetypes, a lot of combos, get you all excited, get your palettes wet and ready for Holiday Cube this week. But before we get into any of that, got to talk about the Patreon, Ben. Patreon.com/Lords of Limited is the place to give back to the show if you so choose. Of course, the show will always be free, but you know, the holiday cheer may be filling your spirit and you want to give back to the show. You've been crushing the drafts on Arena or on Magic Online or at your FNM, getting ready for a GP, all that good stuff. And you want to show some love our way, we really appreciate it. You get access to a bunch of stuff and the place to be to discuss Limited. You get access to the Lords of Limited Discord. That's where anyone and everyone who's a drafter is going to be to talk about new sets, card evaluations. We've already got Ravnica Allegiance spoilers coming out, and we are ready. People are already bubbling about the new mechanics and all the new cards. I'm really excited. Spoiler season is just the best.
It really is. I can't wait to see what our preview card is.
Ooh, hopefully, baby.
We get another one, and I am stoked about the mechanics. I've seen a couple of them already.
Yeah, it looks great. And we want to make sure we shout out each and every person the first week they join, and we did just record a couple days ago, so we just have one person to welcome to the fold this week. Peter, thank you so much for your support. We really, really appreciate it.
That's a nice personal touch there. I think that's the first time we've just had one person.
I know. I love it.
I hope you feel special, Peter. I hope you feel special.
So we've done a handful of Cube episodes in the past, and we're really trying not to overlap with that content because something that's so great about Cube is that once you sort of have a sense of it, it's kind of evergreen. The Holiday Cube doesn't really change that much. You know, they'll maybe swap out 10 or 15 cards each time it comes around, but you know, by and large, it's going to be the same drafting experience. So what's great about that is that episodes we've done on Cube in the past sort of stay relevant. So we really want to encourage folks to go check out older Cube episodes if you haven't already. So that's going to be number 10 is our introduction to Cube. Episode 25 is our vintage Cube crash course. Episode 41, sort of not Cube focused specifically, but episode 41 on learning new formats, so can be applied to Cube. And we do talk about Cube in that episode. And then episode 52, we had Cube with Caleb Durward. So all four of those episodes, I think, are great resources to anyone who hasn't heard them and is interested in dipping their toe into Cube or just learning a bit more about Cube and has already dipped their toe. They're ankle deep, they're knee deep, any of that stuff.
Yeah, I think the most relevant of those is probably 25, the Vintage Cube Crash Course, specific to this Cube. I think that could probably be a pretty big level up for you.
Yeah, for sure. We talk about the sort of archetypes that are relevant there. Storm is a big one that doesn't really exist in other Cube archetypes. But we're going to try not and do any overlap with those episodes, assuming that you've either listened to them or are going to go back and listen to them. Want to make sure we're giving you new, fresh content. So we got some listicle here, Ben. We got 12 rules of Cubesmas before we get into the 12 picks of Cubesmas. What do we got going on here?
Rule number one, fast mana is greater than 5 greater than symbols on the count. So I think what that boils down to is this cube is powered, which means the Moxes are in it, Black Lotus, etc. There's things like Mana Vault, Soul Ring, other ways to ramp quickly. And one of the best things you can do in this cube is play powerful cards like 2 to 3 to 4 turns ahead of time, depending on how many resources you're willing to invest. So I think the single best card in the cube is Soul Ring. That's one mana artifact that taps to add 2 colorless mana to your mana pool. Effects like that are fairly abundant, and you should take advantage of them and try to draft them highly, and they will help make your deck quite a bit better.
Yeah, it's one of the biggest differences between Vintage Cube and other cube iterations you'll see is the abundance of that incredibly explosive artifact mana. Number two, two card combos that win the game instantly are things to look out for. This is the sort of O-Rat approach, the Owen Turtenwald approach. There's a lot of two card combos, three card combos that can win the game instantly or essentially win the game. We're looking at like, you know, Splinter Twin and Pestermite, that sort of thing, or Kiki Jiki, those infinite creature combos. We've got, you know, Through the Breach and Emrakul, or Sneak Attack and Emrakul. A lot of these combos involve the spaghetti monsters. You can do Channel into one of those cards as well. A lot of those two card combos to look to like have an explosive turn, get a big fat creature into play, something that's going to be hugely game impacting many, many turns before you actually should be able to cast it. All those things are really important to look out for.
Yes, one of the things that is great when you're doing it and not great when you're on the receiving end of it is Channel Emrakul. You feel like $1 million when you do it, and you feel miserable when it gets done to you, but that's what you're signing up for when you play Vintage Cube.
Yeah, it's one of the like great things about Vintage Cube and the worst things. It's like you can have games back to back to back of like, I didn't get to play Magic this turn. I didn't get to play Magic. Oh, my opponent didn't get to play Magic. That is sort of a byproduct of Vintage Cube for sure.
Rule number three, don't pass power. So that includes the Power 9, the Moxes, Black Lotus. You could pass Time Twister. That's the one that shuffles your hand and your graveyard into your library, and each player draws a new hand of 7 cards. That one's maybe passable. Time Walk, Ancestral Recall, don't pass those cards. And then there's sort of like some honorary power type cards like Fast Bond, Yawgmoth's Will, Soul Ring, Channel, Library of Alexandria. I mean, we could make a whole list. We go over a lot of those cards in our other cube episode, so make sure you check that one out. But do not pass the most powerful cards in the cube.
Yeah, that's really like a power 20, maybe. Number four, when in doubt between two cards, pick the cheaper card. This is just good cube philosophy across the board. If you want finishers, you'll get them. Now, in Vintage Cube, obviously, you know, the cards we're talking about over and over sort of are archetype or combo dependent, like the Eldrazi monsters, or maybe like a Grizzlebrand or an Inkwell Leviathan or a Blightsteel Colossus, like some sort of irreplaceable fatties, depending on the strategy you're going for. But by and large, otherwise, between two cards, if you have a choice, go with the cheaper option.
And I think following right up behind that, when you're deciding between a land and a card, you should generally take the land. Fixing is super busted in this cube, so the value of fixing goes up with the power level of the cards that you're trying to splash, and there are crazy powerful cards to splash. There's cards like Mind Twist, single black X, target player discards X cards at random from their hand. If you've got a random black duel or two lying around and you can splash Mind Twist, that greatly increases the power level of your deck, and there's tons of things like that throughout the cube that you're going to want to splash, and you never know which ones you're going to see or when, so picking lands early and often is a great recipe for success.
Yeah, absolutely. Taking lands highly is, I think, one of the biggest level ups for cube of all time. And we've talked about this every time we talk about cube, but it's just so, so important to realize why taking lands is such a good strategy.
Yeah, it lets you play more of the cards that you would draft. Instead of getting to play 23 of your draft picks, you get to play, you know, maybe up to 35 or 40, you know, if you went ham on taking lands.
Yeah, for sure. Number six, if you aren't doing something busted, and I really hope that you are, but if you're not, you need cheap disruption and a very low curve to compete. So we're looking at targeted discard like Thoughtseize, Inquisition of Kozilek, that sort of thing. You're looking at cheap counter spells. The Powered Cube has a ton of counter spells. There's like the one mana ones like Forspike or Spell Snare.
Mana Tithe, my arch enemy.
Isn't Daze more of your arch enemy?
Yeah, all of them. Forspike, Mana Tithe, Daze, just wrap them up in a bundle and I hate them
just
all.
Cut them from the cube.
The Trinity.
Hate Bears, these exist a lot in white and green generally. These like two mana creatures like Thalia, Guardian of Thraben, that makes non-creature spells cost one more. There's a lot of these cards that sort of like prey upon people trying to do busted things, cards that don't let players draw more than one card a turn, like Spirit of the Labyrinth to shut down Ancestral Recall, that sort of thing. So you really want to be looking at getting low to the ground and disrupting those decks. And I'll also add to this, if you aren't doing something busted, Caleb Durward really showed us the light when it came to Angels and Dragons. Like, 5-mana flyers are pretty good when you aren't getting to do busted things in cube.
Sometimes you just go, you know, turn 1, Mana Vault, and turn 3, Stormbreath Dragon, and your opponent is dead to your Stormbreath Dragon. Number 7, blue is the best color. And I think there's a lot of reasons for that. Really takes advantage of artifact synergies, and artifacts are some of the best cards because a lot of the cards that ramp you, you know, we've said fast mana is really good. Almost all of those cards are artifacts, or at least a lot of them are. Has access to Ancestral Recall and Time Walk, which are two of the Power 9 cards that are colored. You've got card draw, and card draw's value, again, goes up as the quality of the cards you're drawing goes up, and they're very powerful cards in Vintage Cube, as well as permission. So counter spells and things like that that are going to let you interact with your opponent. Oftentimes, your opponents will be investing multiple resources into casting one single card or one key card in their deck, and if you can have a counter spell loaded up and ready to go, you pretty much nullify everything they've done up to that point.
Draft a deck with a plan is number 8, and this is just... Again, this is just good quality advice for any cube across the board. You want to draft a deck with a plan, not a pile of good cards. I think that's one of the earliest mistakes folks make. It's definitely one of the earliest mistakes I made, was just drafting like a bunch of powerful 4-drops. Ooh, that's a good card. That's a good card. Ooh, that's a rare. You really want to draft a deck with a plan, and you have to do that sort of tenfold in Vintage Cube because there's so many powerful options, so many powerful synergies. So be on the lookout for the combos, for the strong archetypes, for the strong cards that go in any archetype. All of those things are going to lead you down the path of drafting a deck rather than drafting a pile of good cards.
Next one is especially aimed for first timers. Rule number 9, watch cube content before diving in. And YouTube videos are even better than streams, I think, since people are going to be a lot more likely to explain their thought process there. So, you know, I know you and I both grew up on all the Channel Fireball videos with LSV, Caleb Durward, Reed Duke, Paul Cheon, Greg Hatch, Andy Cooperfaust. There's tons of great cube content out there on YouTube. Lots of great stuff on Channel Fireball's website. You should definitely go check it out. It's a great way to learn how to play cube. That's how I learned, and I'm pretty sure that's how you learned, too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would encourage folks, again, because Holiday Cube, this powered cube that they release every so often, is basically evergreen. It hasn't really changed a ton since its first iteration. You can really go back years to check out this content. So folks on this list, like Paul Cheon, doesn't make Magic content anymore. He works at R&D, but his cube draft videos are fantastic, especially to learn how to draft what is known as blue-white Cheons, but he's like, you know, famous for drafting blue-white control decks in cube, and he's great at it, and it's a really good guide for that. My personal favorite Magic content creator, who doesn't really create content anymore, Greg Hatch, used to create videos for Channel Fireball, and I think his draft videos are great, and he's got a lot of really neat ideas of pointing out different card interactions and all that stuff. I think is really helpful to see. And once you watch a few videos, you'll get a sense for most of the cards in the cube, and you'll get to watch matches, and you'll see not only the person who drafted the deck, but their opponents, and you'll really get a good sense of like what's going on in the cube. And I think even just watching a few videos before you dive in will really greatly alleviate any stress you have, because cube can be daunting. Number 10, something very near and dear to our hearts, Ben. Balance is Bay. So we got to talk about, I think it's our favorite card of all time, right?
It really is my favorite card of all time, yeah.
Yeah. Balance is 1 and a white for a sorcery, and it has each player go down to the same number of cards in hand, lands in play, and creatures in play. Now, this may not sound super exciting, but once you see it in practice, and when you see it abused, it's very powerful. And don't let people try and fool you that, oh, it's only situationally good. No, it's just good like all the time. And it
always
goes
all the time.
So late.
Criminally late.
It wheels, it goes 6-pick, whatever. Like I always take it when I see it in a pack because it's my favorite card, and I also think it's really, really strong. It's especially abusable with artifact mana because balance does not count artifacts. So if you've played a few Signets or some Moxen or anything like that, now you've gotten some cards out of your hand, you've affected the board, but you maybe don't have as many lands as your opponent, or you don't have as many creatures as they do because they've been affecting the board in a different way, and boop, you get to Mind Twist them, you get to Stone Rain them, you get to Wrath them. All that stuff is so, so sweet, and balance is great.
Yeah, not truth in naming. It's not very balanced. Also doesn't count Planeswalkers and works very well because it can sometimes ensure that there's a clear board if you don't have any creatures on the battlefield when you cast your balance. Balance might be the reason this podcast exists, honestly. Like,
I don't think we had cubed before. I don't think we knew this before we started the show.
No, we definitely had talked about it. Yeah.
Okay.
Because there'd been maybe not powered cube we hadn't done, but we had done cube like in the March, April months. I'm pretty sure I knew that about you because I was thinking like, how bad could this guy be if he thinks balance is awesome also?
Yeah, that's true. It's a really good test of character. Like if you're unsure you want to be friends with someone, you should just ask them how they feel about balance.
Yep, I think so. Rule number 11. Mono red is public enemy number one. Don't be the enemy.
Now, come on.
Yeah, I mean, whatever. That's a little harsh. But so mono red is known as the fun police in Cube, and it's a pretty straightforward deck to draft. Sometimes you just got to do it. You know, some people really like doing it. Lee Sharp is pretty famous for being a huge mono red advocate. It's pretty easy to join a draft and say, I'm going to draft mono red. That's a great way to get your feet wet in Cube. Like most of the time that deck will be open. Pretty much you pick red cards, the cheaper the better, and you smash your opponent's face in.
I also will say that drafting mono red towards the end of a Cube format is a great way to pick up play points. Because like the last yes. couple days, no one wants to do it. Everyone's like, oh, I haven't gotten to draft Sneak Attack yet. Oh, I haven't gotten to draft this mono green deck yet. Mono red's always open the last few days of Cube. And finally, number 12, have fun. Seriously, Cube is not a competitive format. The huge range from red deck wins to storming off and everything in between, there's a lot to explore, and we really encourage you all to do what's fun. Maybe you'll lose a few play points or tickets here and there, but it's not that difficult to at least have it be a slow bleed in these phantom point or these phantom draft events that do play points and tickets. And there's just so many cool things to get to do. Like, you know, I've 1-2'd with many Storm decks and had a blast. I think there's a lot out there for everyone, and I really encourage you to like dive in and just like be ready for a fun experience.
Yeah, my Cube drafting usually goes in waves of like, I try really hard and then I try to do some sweet stuff and lose a bunch of play points. And I'm like, all right, I got to buckle down and try hard again, get some play points back and then try to do some sweet stuff. Except there was one whole winter where all I did was draft Storm. I lost so much, but it was so much fun.
Yeah, it's so funny. I feel like you and I had like the same sort of like progressions of Cube of like figuring it out. And then like, okay, this time I'm going to try Storm. Like, and I'm just going to keep trying to force it or whatever. And yeah, it's a great way to light some play points on fire, at least for me.
So that brings us to drafts. So we're going to take you through draft logs here. We've got some draft logs picked out, and we're going to go through each card and, you know, talk about what archetypes it belongs in and just follow the path that we navigated through the first 12 picks of each draft. So I've got the first one queued up here. Are you ready to take a seat, Ethan?
I'm so ready.
All right. Pack one, pick one. You see the following cards as options. Gitaxian Probe, single blue Phyrexian mana, so you can pay 2 life or a blue mana to cast it. Look at target player's hand, draw a card.
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole bunch of cantrips in blue, these like one mana replacement effects. Gitaxian Probe, I think, is great specifically in Storm because it can be free. And I think also specifically in blue decks where you've got a bunch of counterspells, I think that text of look at target player's hand becomes quite relevant.
Next up, Findhorned Elves, single green for a 1/1, tapped, add green to your mana pool.
Fast mana is greater than.
It really is. Now, like, creatures aren't great. You'd prefer to have artifact fast mana, but if you're not getting the artifact fast mana, green elves is a good way to go.
I think there's an instinct to look at a card like this and a card like Avenger of Zendikar, maybe, and just be like, oh, I need the Avenger. More often than not, like, remember we said when picking between two cards, take the cheaper card. The thing that makes the green ramp decks tick is the one mana dorks. So, like, you just want as many of them as you can get your hands on.
Next up, Blink of an Eye. 2 mana, colorless and a blue for an instant. Kicker, 1 and a blue. Return target non-land permanent to its owner's hand. If this spell was kicked, draw a card.
Meh.
Dominaria All-Star, Cube, meh. Next up, we've got Reclamation Sage. 2 and a green for the 2/1 when it ETBs, destroy target artifact or enchantment.
Yeah, these effects are so main deckable. They're way more main deckable than you think. Being able to blow up artifacts and enchantments sometimes, but artifacts, especially because of all the fast mana around, the artifact mana is really important.
Yeah, I would play 2 to 3 copies of that type of card in my green decks. Next, Kitesail Freebooter, 1 and a black for the 1/2 flyer. When it ETBs, target opponent reveals their hand. You choose a non-creature, non-land card from it. Exile that card until Kitesail Freebooter leaves the battlefield.
I have a very special place in my heart for like the white-black. I mean, it's sort of like Smokestacks, Braids, but also this like trio of these creatures. Kitesail Freebooter, Mesmeric Fiend, and Tide Hollow Sculler all have like similar effects. And Freebooter is a recent addition, as you know, because it's from Ixalan. But it really slots in nicely to that sort of like attack your hand strategy.
Love those cards. Fire Blast is next. 4 red for the instant. You can sacrifice 2 mountains rather than pay Fire Blast mana cost. Fire Blast deals 4 damage to target creature or player.
Ben, can I interest you in Inescapable Blaze being free?
You could interest me in that. If I was drafting mono red, which I won't be.
Which you won't be. Okay, I understand. Yeah, this is a great finisher in the mono red decks and is really, really powerful with that alternate cost.
Next up, Everflowing Chalice. 0 for the artifact. Tap to add colorless for each charge counter on Everflowing Chalice and has multi-kicker of 2. So each time you pay multi-kicker, you get a charge counter that will tap to add mana. So if you pay 2, it'll tap to add 1. If you pay 4 mana to cast it, it'll tap to add 2. Beware when casting this on Magic Online that you can accidentally put it on the battlefield for 0 and it will do nothing if you're not paying attention.
Right. You can cast it for kicker or for multi-kicker. Or you can cast it or you can cast it for multi-kicker. And if you click cast it, it just goes into play as nothing, as a 0 mana artifact.
Usually followed by a cry of pain from whoever's streaming.
An ellipsis in chat, WTF from your opponent. Like, it's not great. But fast mana is bae. It's greater than really, really fantastic pickup here. Everflowing Chalice is nice because it like scales with the game. And you can also maybe like pay 4 to cast it for 2 and then cast a Signet. Like the things that you're allowed to then use the mana immediately on are also great because they let you double spell sometimes.
Next up, we've got Rashadan Port. This is a land that taps to add colors, and you can pay 1 and tap it to tap target land.
I never know how to feel about this card. What are your thoughts on Port?
I think Port is great in any mono-colored aggro deck.
I think that's a great way to put it.
So you're trying to leverage your extra mana to deny your opponent resources on the turns where you don't have, you know, some big impactful spell to play.
Yeah, in those monocolor aggro decks, if you've got like Port or like a Mutavault or a Mishra's Factory, like any sort of colorless land that then can give you utility in some way, allows you to like have a little bit of flood insurance, which is nice.
Next up, we've got Ravages of War, 3 and a white for the sorcery, destroy all lands.
Oh, baby. What a great card. This and Armageddon, this is like a functional reprint of Armageddon. They're the same card, both exist in the cube. And blowing up lands sure is fun for one player. In a game of Magic.
usually if you're the one casting it. This goes in mono white and is a great curve topper in mono white. Next up, Goblin Dark Dwellers, 3 red for the 4/4 menace. When it ETBs, you may cast target instant or sorcery card with converted mana cost 3 or less from your graveyard without paying its mana cost. If that card would be put into your graveyard this turn, exile it instead.
I think unless I've got something like Ancestral Recall or Time Walk, I'm not super excited about Dark Dwellers.
Agree. Next up, we've got Xenagos the Reveler, 2 red-green for the Planeswalker with 3 starting loyalty, plus 1 to add X mana in any combination of red or green to your mana pool, where X is the number of creatures you control, 0 to put a 2/2 red and green satyr token with haste onto the battlefield, minus 6 to exile the top 7 cards of your library. You may put any number of creatures and or land cards from among them onto the battlefield.
We've come a long way from Modern Cube, and even in Modern Cube, where red-green Garbo is king, Xenagos isn't even that good. Xenagos is a bad card in cube, in my opinion.
I like him fine.
What?
I do. I'm a sucker for Xenagos in Powered Cube.
Wait, you're a sucker for Xenagos in Powered Cube? What decks are you putting this in?
I don't know. Any deck with a Signet in it that has red and green mana? The turn 3 Xenagos is big game. Some decks just can't compete with 2/2 Hasters in Powered Cube.
Wow. What? I want to play against those decks.
Next up, we've got Kozilek, Butcher of Truth. 10 mana for the 12/12. When you cast Kozilek, draw 4 cards. Has Annihilator 4, so whenever it attacks, defending player sacrifices 4 permanents. And when it's put into a graveyard from anywhere, its owner shuffles their graveyard into their library.
So, you know, the shuffle effects on Eldrazi we've talked about before, but you can reanimate them with instant speed reanimation. You can like nab it as it's like going to shuffle in but doesn't quite get there. That triggers on the stack. Kozilek is so funny because it's like sort of in between. It's like 10 mana, which feels like maybe I could even cast that if I have like Mana Vault or Soul Ring, and it's not quite powerful enough to like cheat it into play. But Annihilator 4 is a big game if you're like sneaking that in or through the breaching it. It doesn't entice me as much as like, you know, Emrakul or one of the Ulamogs.
Next, we've got Joyra, Weatherlight Captain, 2 blue red for the 3/3. Whenever you cast a historic spell, draw a card.
This really impressed me in the last iteration of the Power Cube. This is a recent addition, obviously, because it's from Dominaria. But there's a lot of historic cards in Cube because you're trying to draft fast mana. Artifacts are very good. So it's not hard to trigger this, and it can kind of get out of control. I was impressed with this, and I do like this card quite a bit.
Next up, we've got Dragon Lord Dromoka, 4 green white for the 5/7, can't be countered, flying, lifelink, and your opponents can't cast spells during your turn.
Yeah, a really strong sideboard card against some decks, and a main deck card depending on what sort of, I don't know, you could be drafting a big Naya deck or Bant deck or something, but this card is not, you know, again, like I said, finishers kind of a dime a dozen, and I think this sort of falls in that camp.
And last, we've got Angel of Invention, 3 white for the 2/1 flying vigilance lifelink with fabricate 2. So when it ETBs, you can either put 2 +1/+1 counters on it or make 2 1/1 colorless servo artifact tokens, and other creatures you control get +1/+1.
It's a great top end card for any sort of white weenie or white token strategy.
Absolutely. So when we take a look at this pack overall, this is a pretty weak vintage cube pack. I would be disappointed to open this pack.
Yeah, I agree. There's not like, you know, there's nothing really busted in terms of archetype defining cards or two card combo cards. So yeah, you're really looking at like role players or maybe some niche strategy cards.
So cards that stand out to me as potential first picks would be like Findhorn Elves, the one mana dork, Everflowing Chalice as some colorless fast mana, Kozilek maybe if you're trying to do some sweet busted things like cheating out an Eldrazi if you're into that. That's really about it. Like Fireblast if you want to draft mono red, Rashadan Port maybe if you tend towards aggro decks.
You could also like grab Angel of Invention or Ravages of War and try and wheel the other one because they both sort of go in the same kind of deck. I would agree that this is a pretty weak pack, and I think just grabbing the fast mana here, the colorless card, that's like the most flexible. And like, I think you and I are on the same page here. Like, if I can draft an artifact ramp deck every time, I'd like to do that.
Yes, would sign up for that 10 out of 10 times. So with that being said, I took Everflowing Chalice here as the pick.
Great. So that moves us on to pack one, pick two. You see a Searing Spear, one in red for the instant, deal 3 damage to any target.
Either mono red or maybe in some sort of blue red Splinter Twin deck, like as some cheap early interaction. Not great.
Regrowth, one in a green for a sorcery. Return target card from your graveyard to your hand.
I like Regrowth a fair amount in this cube. There's a lot of busted stuff you can do in combo-y decks, especially Storm, and Regrowth is a pretty key piece in those decks.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, like Dark Dwellers, like this card is just absurdly good with anything like Time Walk or Ancestral Recall. Monastery Swift Spear is next. Single red for a 1-2 with haste and prowess.
Mono red only, blech.
Bone Shredder, 2 and a black for a 1-1 flying echo, meaning the turn after it comes into play, you have to pay its mana cost on your upkeep or you sacrifice it. And when it ETBs, you destroy target non-artifact, non-black creature.
This is fine. You know, usually goes in some sort of recurring nightmare type deck. That's a 2 and a black enchantment that lets you sack a creature to rebuy a creature. Really the only kind of deck I would be excited to play that card in.
Yeah, it's also fairly replaceable. There's a lot of these black creatures that like ETB and destroy a creature. And the conditional ones, like now that Ravenous Chupacabra exists, the conditional ones sort of feel a little bit worse than they used to. And they already sort of felt replaceable to me. Umezawa's Jite is next. 2 mana for the artifact equipment. Whenever equipped creature deals combat damage, period, you put 2 counters on Jite and you can remove a counter from it to do one of the following things. You can gain 2 life. You can have equipped creature get +2/+2 until end of turn, or you can have target creature get -1/-1 until end of turn. And the equip cost is 2.
This card is busted. Good in any deck with creatures. You will hear cube purists or cube snobs say that Umezawa's Jite and like some of the swords, etc., are not good cards in the powered cube because there's more busted things that you can be doing. Not everybody in an 8-person pod gets to do busted things, and Umezawa's Jite is very, very good in any deck with creatures, and you should pick it if you're going to plan to put like 10+, 8+ creatures in your deck. It's just such a game warping card.
Also, it's just in a league of its own ahead of the swords.
I would agree with that. I think it's sort of on a similar tier with sort of Body and Mind to me, like those two.
Yeah, I still feel like it's just a tier above. But yeah, I hear what you're saying. Sorceress Spyglass is next. 2 mana for the artifact. As Sorceress Spyglass enters the battlefield, look at an opponent's hand, then choose any card name. Activated abilities of sources with the chosen name can't be activated unless they're mana abilities.
Yeah, this is like a fine main deck card, maybe, if you've got your opponent's got a lot of planeswalkers. I generally lean towards sideboarding this card.
Yeah, I would agree. Metalworker is next. This is 3 mana for a 1-2, and you tap it, reveal any number of artifact cards in your hand, and you add 2 colorless mana to your mana pool for each card revealed this way.
Very, very powerful in a deck with like 10+ artifacts.
Yeah, there's a lot of these like niche, like many artifact payoff cards. This is one of them, and I never know when to take it. I'm always like, maybe I'm supposed to let it wheel? Am I supposed to take it early and like hope to build around it? It's tough to find that balance with these kinds of cards, I think.
Yeah, usually doesn't wheel, and I think is best in decks with draw sevens, because a lot of times you have to play your other early artifacts out ahead of this. So if you can cast a draw 7 to refill your hand with new artifacts, that's when things really start to get interesting.
Yeah. Mana Vault is next. Single mana for an artifact. It doesn't untap during your untap step. At the beginning of your upkeep, you can pay 4 mana if you do untap it. At the beginning of your draw step, if Mana Vault is tapped, it deals a damage to you. Why do we have all this text? I'll tell you why. Because it's a 1 mana artifact that taps to add 3 colorless mana to your mana pool.
Yeah, card is busted. You should pick it very highly, and it should not go much past like pick 3 or pick 4.
This is power 20, right?
I think so, yeah.
Gifts on Given, 3 and a blue for an instant. Search your library for up to 4 cards with different names and timeout on Magic Online. Oh, wait, sorry. And
yeah, you will never find me playing this card on stream.
Yeah, Ben goes, search your library for up to 4 cards. Concede. Okay. The text of the card. Search your library for up to 4 cards with different names. Reveal them. Target opponent chooses 2 of those cards. Put the chosen cards into your graveyard and the rest into your hand. Then shuffle your library.
Yeah, it's a difficult card to play with. Very skill testing. Draft that one with caution if you are new to Cube.
The most often interaction you'll see is you don't actually find 4 cards. You go and find Unburial Rites and some fatty to reanimate. Your opponent has to put both of those into your graveyard. So you do that on their end step. And then on your turn, you reanimate the fatty that you found.
Or you'll see things like packages with Eternal Witness or Regrowth, the card we saw earlier, things that can get cards out of your graveyard. So you're essentially getting the cards you want anyway.
Right, exactly. Deranged Termin is next. 3 green green for a 1/1 with Echo. And when Deranged Termin enters the battlefield, you put 4 1/1 green squirrel creature tokens into the battlefield, and squirrel creatures get +1/+1. So a whopping 9/9 of power and toughness coming into play with this creature.
Yeah, this is a great threat. Powering this out early in a green deck is very good, and I think it really excels in like a blue-green opposition deck. Opposition's 2 blue-blue for an enchantment that lets you tap a creature to tap target opponent's creature, artifact, or land. And if you get enough creatures, you can just essentially lock your opponent out of the game totally.
Yeah, feels so bad. Again, one-sided games of Magic. Banalish Marshal, white for a 3/3 human knight. Other creatures you control get +1/+1.
Goes in white weenie and is very good there.
Shouldred Whispering One, 5 black for a 6/6 with Swamp Walk. At the beginning of your upkeep, you return target creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield. At the beginning of each opponent's upkeep, that player sacrifices a creature.
Yeah, this is a fine reanimation target. Not one of the best, like maybe tier 1.5, I think. But a card you're probably only playing in a reanimator deck.
Right. Jace Bellerin is up next. 1 blue-blue for a 3 loyalty planeswalker. +2, each player draws a card. -1, target player draws a card. -10, target player mills 20.
Yeah, this is a fine little planeswalker. Would play it in any blue deck, I think.
Yeah, I think so. It's like very unassuming. A lot of times, maybe it's like just draw a card, gain some life because it dies. But don't sleep on that plus ability. That plus ability can get out of hand. Like a 3-mana 5 loyalty planeswalker is tough to deal with. Bitter Blossom is our last card in the pack. 1 and a black for a tribal enchantment. At the beginning of your upkeep, you lose a life and you make a 1/1 black fairy creature token with flying.
Yeah, I love Bitter Blossom. I will be picking this card probably too highly, but it's a pretty powerful card. Really excels in the stacks decks where you are interested in sacrificing multiple permanents and sometimes just wins the game on its own if it comes down on turn 2.
I haven't looked at the full list, but it came out today of like what cards are being swapped in and out. I have some bad news, Ben.
What's that?
Braid's Cabal Minion is not in this powered cube.
No!
Yeah.
That was one of my favorite cards.
That's only going to increase my win percentage, but I'm so upset that it's gone.
I agree. My win rate will go up, but man, yeah. I love Braids.
My enjoyment will go down. So yeah, this is definitely a better pack than the first one we saw. What do you like here?
Yeah, I think cards that stand out are Umezawa's Jitei, Mana Vault, Bitter Blossom. I think those are the 3 cards I've got eyes for out of this pack. And I think I ended up settling on Mana Vault. Just fast mana is too good to pass. Mana Vault's one of the top 20 cards in the cube. Don't pass it.
Yeah, agreed.
Moving on to pack 3, you see the following cards as options. So we've got 2 pieces of fast mana so far. World is our oyster. We could be going any direction. There's Looter Ilkor, 1 and a blue for a 1/1 with Shadow. When it deals damage to an opponent, draw a card, then discard a card.
So this probably shines the most in a blue-black reanimate deck because it allows you to, you know, churn through your deck and also get creatures from your hand into your graveyard. But, you know, not a super powerful card in this iteration of Cube.
Next, we've got Jackalpup, single red for the 2/1. When Jackalpup is dealt damage, it deals that much damage to you.
Man, this used to just be the creepiest of power creep cards, and now it's kind of like at the bottom rung of the one drops you can play. Like, you'll put this in your mono red deck, but it's not even a high pick there.
Next, we've got Golgari Signet, 2 mana for an artifact, single mana to tap and add black green to your mana pool. So ramps and fixes you.
I think everything we've said about artifact mana applies here.
Jiraga Tree Speaker, single green for the 1/1 with level up for 1 and a green. So you can pay 1 and a green to put a level up counter on it as a sorcery effect. When it's levels 1 through 4, it taps to add 2 green to your mana pool and is a 1/2. If it's level 5+, elves you control have tap, add green to your mana pool. So essentially building your own little soul ring here. Soul ring on a stick is how this guy is referred to.
Right, yeah, the green soul ring. This is the best of the green one drops in this cube, right?
Yep, I think so.
So definitely a very high pick for a green deck, and I think a high pick in general.
Desperate Ritual is next. One in a red for an instant. Add red, red, red to your mana pool and has Splice onto Arcane for one in a red.
This is strictly a storm card. If you're not trying to get some spice in your life, avoid at all costs.
Cast Down, one in a black for the instant. Destroy target non-legendary creature.
This is fine, but again, like, these Doomblade effects are replaceable, so not necessarily high picks. You will, I think, in this version of Cube more than others, want to value this kind of spot removal. But compare something like this to something like even just Doomblade, this is not going to hit a lot of the things that people will be doing quickly. Like if people are getting out an Eldrazi quickly or getting out Grizzlebrand or Elishnorn or something like that, Cast Down's not going to hit those. So I would rank this low among the spot removal, but something like, you know, Doomblade or Swords to Plowshares that has a much wider range of targets that it can hit, I think would be good picks and definitely things you want to include in your deck.
Next up, we've got Urborg, Tomb of Yawgmoth. Legendary land, each land is a swamp in addition to its other land types.
This card is fine, right? This is not a high pick.
Nope. Next up, we've got Sower of Temptation, 2 blue-blue for the 2/2 flyer. When it ETBs, gain control of target creature for as long as Sower of Temptation remains on the battlefield.
This is a powerful effect, but very, very fragile. Sometimes it can just run away with the game, but, you know, it can lead to some blowouts as well. There's a lot of blue control magic effects in the cube, and I prefer them to not be fragile creatures.
Next up, we've got Recruiter of the Guard, 2 and a white for the 1/1. When it ETBs, you may search your library for a creature card with 2 or less, reveal it, put it into your hand, then shuffle your library.
Best home for this card is going to be in some sort of Kiki Jiki combo deck, where this can find either Kiki Jiki or one of the cards that it can go infinite with, like Pestermite or Deceiver Exarch.
And we've got another Shockland, Godless Shrine, that's the white-black Shockland.
So something to note about dual lands, I think, is like where they go in terms of archetypes. Black-white dual lands are very important because black-white decks have very high mana cost requirements. So you're going to have a lot of like one black-black on turn 3, but then I want 2 white-white on turn 4. So you're going to need dual lands a lot. Things like blue-green decks, I think, are pretty color hungry because they need green early for the mana dorks, but they also need blue-blue on turn 4 for planeswalkers or opposition, that sort of thing. So being aware of like what dual lands are more important than others in terms of what archetypes you have or how highly you need to prioritize dual lands depending on what archetype or color pair you're in, I think is something important to note.
Yeah, and I think once you know, like if you're really drafting a color pair, once you know you're in that color pair, you're supposed to take dual lands and fetches of that color pair almost over everything.
Yes, absolutely. Again, like what we said, when you get to play more lands or more cards that you drafted, your deck is going to be better.
Right, and one of the best ways to win games of Cube is casting your busted cards, and dual lands help you do that. We've got Polukranos next, has Monstrosity X for green XX, and Polukranos becomes monstrous. It deals X damage divided as you choose among any number of target creatures your opponent controls, and each of those creatures deals damage in response to Polukranos.
I mean, green doesn't have a lot of access to removal, so it's fine, I guess, if you're in a mono green deck, but this is generally not what the green ramp strategy is about. You're really trying to like skip the 3, 4, and 5 mana creatures and go from like Mana Dork to your Primeval Titans or your Avenger of Zendikars or your Crater of Behemoths.
Agreed. And last, we've got Armageddon, 3 and a white, destroy all lands.
Oof. Ravages and Armageddon? That's some spicy stuff.
Yeah, saw Ravages earlier and seeing Armageddon now. Goes in the same deck. Mono white is great there.
Yeah, I might be tempted by Jiraga Tree Speaker here because I do think that's the best of the green mana dorks. And there's not much else super powerful. Like Golgari Signet is good, but it's one of the worst signets. Like green signets are generally the worst ones because green has access to better ramp in the one mana dorks. So I think it's between those two for me.
Yeah, I ended up on Golgari Signet since I already had 2 colorless cards. I figured another one was pretty good and could lead me to staying totally open while keeping the ramp thing going.
Yeah, makes sense. We got 3 artifact ramp spells in our pile going into pick 4. You see Sakura Tribe Elder, also known as Steve, 1 and a green for a 1/1. Sacrifice it to search your library for a basic land. Put that card on the battlefield tapped, then shuffle your library.
Yeah, it's very good, especially with cards like Heartbeat of Spring or Mirari's Wakes, like is one of the best ways to ramp you out. Those are effects that like double the amount of mana each land you control produces. And is like fine, I think, outside of decks with those type of effects.
Mm-hmm. 4 spike, dare we say it, single blue target spell is countered unless its controller pays 1.
Yes, will always get me every time it's cast.
High Tide, single blue for an instant until end of turn. Whenever a player taps an island for mana, that player adds an additional blue to his or her mana pool.
Yeah, it goes in a heavy blue-based storm deck and not super playable outside of that. You can make infinite mana in like a heavy blue deck with Palancron with this also as another combo card, and then maybe try to like fireball your opponent out. I know that's like something that Owen likes to do on his stream, but is not for the faint of heart. High Tide is an advanced cube card.
For sure. Song of the Dryads, 2 and a green for an aura, enchant permanent. Enchanted permanent is a colorless forest land.
I think this is surprisingly playable. I always overlook this card, but green doesn't get a lot of removal, and Song of the Dryads is just fine removal. Sometimes you need to get something dead.
Yeah, and being able to hit Planeswalkers is big game with this card. Couple dual lands, Savannah, which is just a forest plains, and Overgrown Tomb, which is the black-green shock land.
Same thing applies.
Legion's Landing, new addition from Ixalan, single white for the legendary enchantment. When it enters the battlefield, you create a 1/1 white vampire creature token with lifelink. When you attack with three or more creatures, you transform Legion's Landing into Odonto the First Fort, which can tap for a white mana, or you can pay two and a white and tap it to make a 1/1 white vampire creature token with lifelink.
Yeah, not as good in Vintage Cube as it is in Standard. I think this is like pretty mediocre. You'd play it in white weenie decks, but I don't even think it's a super high pick there.
Yeah, I agree with that. Hypnotic Spectre, 1BB for a 2/2 with flying. When it deals damage to an opponent, that player discards a card at random.
This is one of my favorite cards in the cube. Sometimes you just get out of turn 2 Hypnotic Spectre and go to town.
Wait, what about a turn 1 off Dark Ritual, baby? Living the 1993 Ooh. Dream. Yeah, I think Hypnotic Spectre is probably a little underrated. It's a strong card. Imperial Recruiter, 2 and a red for a 1/1. When it enters the battlefield, you search your library for a creature with power 2 or less, then shuffle your library, and put it into your hand, then shuffle your library.
Yep, again, goes in Kiki combo and lets you search up those combo pieces.
Huntmaster of the Fells, you're going to tell me you like this card also, aren't you? 2 red green.
I am not.
2 red green for a 2/2. It enters the battlefield, you gain 2 life, and you make a 2/2 wolf token. At the beginning of each upkeep, if no spells were cast, you flip it into Ravager of the Fells. And then when it flips, you deal 2 damage to target player and 2 damage to up to 1 target creature that player controls. And then if 2 spells are cast, you flip it back.
Dang, I am impressed that you knew what the backside of that was called.
Yeah, buddy.
Huntmaster is fine. Mediocre, like a good sideboard card against red aggro decks or white aggro decks, but you're almost never playing it in your main deck, I think.
Yeah, I think like the only time I'm ever happy to play Huntmaster of the Fells is when I'm memeing with Birthing Pod, which is one of my favorite kinds of like bad decks to draft, because I don't think it's good, but I have fun drafting those decks. Elspeth, Sun's Champion, 4 white white for a 4 loyalty planeswalker, plus 1, make 3 1/1 white soldier tokens, minus 3, destroy all creatures with power 4 or greater, and minus 7, you get an emblem with creatures you control, get plus 2, and have flying.
Yeah, this is a great finisher. Ramping out an early Elspeth is a good way to win a game of Magic, and I think this is like a top tier finisher as far as 6 drops go.
So I feel like maybe 3 years ago, maybe 4 years ago, I felt like there was a pretty like consistent across the board opinion about what were like the best planeswalkers in each color. And I think none of them are the same now. Like this Elspeth is so good, and like new Gideon is so good. I remember feeling like 4-drop Elspeth was like one of the best planeswalkers in cube, period. And it's just so low now.
I agree with that assessment completely.
Last card in the pack is one of my favorite planeswalkers, Ajani Vengeant, 2 red white for a 3 loyalty walker, plus 1, target permanent doesn't untap during its next untap step. Important safety tip, it does not tap the permanent, it just keeps it tapped. Minus 2, you cast Lightning Helix, deal 3 to a target and gain 3 life. And minus 7, destroy all lands target player controls.
Yeah, this card is great. Goes in both of our favorite archetypes, which is red-white balance.
So when you see this pack, you've got your 3 mana rocks. What do you like here? We don't get to just default take an artifact this time.
Yeah, no, this is a tougher pick. I think the dual lands are reasonable options just to stay open because there's not a clear direction in this pack. I think Elspeth is another thing I was probably considering, as well as Ajani Vengeant. Like, planeswalkers are just good things to do with fast mana. I ended up settling on High Tide. I must have been feeling pretty spicy. So High Tide's a Storm card, and Storm's a deck that really wants a lot of fast mana. Maybe not necessarily artifact mana. So I'm not sure where my brain was at with this pick, but I think any of those duels, Elspeth or High Tide, probably all reasonable options.
Well, and something to say about like having all the fast mana from artifacts and then taking a card like High Tide really makes the value of draw sevens go up in value. You really now want to grab any kind of Time Twister, Wheel of Fortune, Memory Jar effect that you can.
So moving on to pack 1, pick 5, maybe on a Storm route here, you see the following cards as options. Thirst for Knowledge, 2 and a blue for the instant, draw 3 cards, discard 2 cards unless you discard an artifact card.
Yeah, this is good for reanimate if you are looking for a discard outlet. Good if you've got a lot of artifacts, because this can be a way to net some card advantage. Drawing 3 is a big game.
Next up, we've got Spectral Procession. 2/white hybrid mana, 3 of those. You can either cast it for 6 generic mana or 3 white mana. So sorcery, put 3/1/1 white spirit creature tokens with flying onto the battlefield.
Only going in mono white.
And is insane in mono white.
Yes, especially if you have any anthem effects.
Yeah, almost a reason to be mono white, in my opinion.
Wow, interesting.
Wheeling Spectral Procession makes me want to draft mono white.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that.
Acidic Slime, 3 green green, is next. 2/2 death touch when it ETBs, destroy target artifact, enchantment, or land.
Yeah, I mean, if Reclamation Sage is good, Acidic Slime is great, and that's how I feel.
Wrath of God is next. 2 white-white for a sorcery, destroy all creatures, they can't be regenerated.
There is an abundance of sweepers in cube, especially in white, but Wrath of God is the best. The 4-mana sweepers are great, and this is a really strong card for white control decks.
Shardless Agent is next. 1 green-blue for 2/2 with Cascade. So when you cast this, exile cards from the top of your library until you reveal one with converted mana cost 2 or less, and cast it without paying its mana cost.
So the dream is to cast Ancestral Vision off of this card, which is the, like, Ancestral Recall with no mana cost that just has suspend four for a single blue. Shardless Agent is fine. If you have a reason to want this body, like Opposition or Birthing Pod, plus like cheap things that you'd be happy to cast off of it, I think you can find a home for it, but it's kind of niche.
Next is Lotus Bloom. Speaking of things with no mana cost, this has 0 mana, suspend 3, and after 3 turns, you get yourself a black lotus, so it can sacrifice to add 3 mana of any one color to your mana pool on delay.
Yeah, I mean, this is pretty good with Storm. It's not like as good as Lion's Eye Diamond or Black Lotus, because you can't cast it from your graveyard after you've like cast a Yawgmoth's Will, but it's still a really powerful card.
Next up, we've got Jade Light Ranger. 1 green-green for the 2/1. When it ETBs, it explores and then explores again. I'm going to be casting a lot of those on Saturday.
Yeah, again, I think this falls into the same camp. It's not Modern Cube. This is not an all-star. This is not what the green decks are trying to do. I don't think this is going to be a particularly high pick.
Yeah, I got a little excited when I saw it, and then I remembered it was doing Vintage Cube.
Yeah.
Speaking of cards that aren't as good in Vintage Cube, next up we've got Glorybringer, 3 red-red for a 4/4 flying haste. You can exert it as it attacks. If you do, it deals 4 damage to target non-dragon creature and opponent controls.
Yeah, I mean, so I think hasty dragons are still good, as Caleb taught us, but I'm not looking to take them highly.
Next, we've got Fire Drinker Satyr, single red for the 2/1. When it's dealt damage, it deals that much damage to you and has the Lords of Limited patent pending smoke breathing. 1 and a red, gets +1/+0 until end of turn and deals 1 damage to you.
Mono red only.
Next up, Celestial Colonnade, our first man land we've seen, I think. Mm-hmm. ETB's tapped and is a blue-white duel, and you can pay 3 blue-white to make it a 4/4 flying vigilance angel or elemental until end of turn, excuse me.
This and Tar Pit, I think, are the best creature lands that exist. Creeping Tar Pit, the blue-black one. But this is fantastic and definitely a high pick if you think you're in either of these colors or just like, you know, not knowing where you're going. If you just got 3 artifacts in your pile, for example.
And last, we've got Argul's Bloodfast, 1 and a black for the legendary enchantment. 1 and a black, pay 2 life, draw card. At the beginning of your upkeep, if you have 5 or less life, you may transform Argul's Bloodfast into...
Oh, baby, does he know?
I don't know the name of it, but you can sacrifice a creature to gain life equal to the sacrificed creature's toughness?
Yeah, something like that. This is not... You're not playing this in cube. This is way too slow.
Actually, I've sided it in control mirrors. I think it's good in control mirrors.
Oh, okay.
I was previously on your stance, and then someone in Twitch chat talked me into it in a control mirror, and I think it won me the game.
All right. So it definitely had some applications out of the board. So this pack, you know, I feel like there's some different directions you can go. I think Lotus Bloom leads more towards Storm. The Celestial Colonnade feels like more of a safe pick. Like, it's a strong card. If you end up in a blue-white control deck, it's also good because it can give you fixing depending on where you end up. I also always like cards that can help me fix for blue, because that leads me out to the powerful blue cards that exist in the cube. Thirst for Knowledge is just good card draw, and we've already got 3 artifacts in our pile, so I'd be looking at one of those 3, I think.
And I ended up settling on Thirst for Knowledge. I think is fine in Storm and good in decks outside of Storm as well.
Yeah, I think something to take away, as you see like Ben and I talking about the picks at the end of these packs, it's very rare that we're like, oh, Windmill Slam this card. It's head and shoulders above the rest. The cards in cube are powerful, and there's a lot of different directions you can go in, and it really just depends on what kind of deck you want to draft.
Mm-hmm.
Pick 6, halfway through the picks of cubesmiths here, Ben. We've got a Yavimaya Elder, 1 green-green for the 2/1. When it dies, you may search your library for up to 2 basic land cards, reveal them, put them into your hand, then shuffle your library, and you can pay 2 to sacrifice Yavimaya Elder to draw a card. It's like the green Ancestral Recall.
Not quite. This is just too much mana, I think, to spend in a card that has pretty little impact on the game.
Yeah. Empty the Warrens is next. 3 and a red for a sorcery. You put 2/1/1 red goblin creature tokens onto the battlefield, and it has Storm. So when you cast this card, you copy it for each spell that was cast before it this turn.
Yeah, this is the aw shucks I didn't get past Tendrils or Brain Freeze card.
Yeah, for sure. Though, you know, you want to look out for ways to give these haste if you can, like a Goblin Bushwhacker kind of effect, if this is your only Storm payoff.
Yep, because nothing feels worse than storming off and then your opponent casting Wrath of God.
Yeah, for sure. Lightning Strike, 1 and a red for an instant, deals 3 damage to any target.
Yeah, fine. Could play a mono red or, again, early defense in like a Kiki combo type deck.
Zurgo Bellstriker, single red for 2/2. It can't block creatures with power 2 or greater. Who's blocking with their mono red cards? And it has dash for 1 and a red. You can pay it for its dash cost. It comes into play, it has haste, and then you return it to your hand at the end of turn.
Mono red only. And I should say about Lightning Strike, another burn that can go to any target as well. Also very useful for killing planeswalkers. So you're probably playing them in any red-based control deck as well.
Right. The burn that can go face is really much better in mono red for that reason. Like, one, that it can close out the game, but two, that it can kill planeswalkers. Hissing Quagmire, another creature land. It enters the battlefield tapped, taps for black or green, and you can pay 1 black green to turn it into a 2/2 black and green elemental creature with death touch until end of turn.
Fine card. I will say one of my level ups last cube season was that I think there's a limit to the number of tapped lands you want in your cube decks. Tapped lands are a big cost in Vintage Cube.
Yeah, especially in Vintage Cube, I think, because of how quick some decks can be. Yeah, I agree with that assessment. Blade Splicer, 2 and a white for a 1/1. When it ETBs, you make a 3/3 colorless Golem artifact creature token, and Golem creatures you control have first strike.
Yeah, I think this is like a great 22nd, 23rd type card in almost any white deck. Just like an efficient card. The two bodies is pretty frequently relevant for a lot of decks, and especially good in mono white.
Geist of St. Traft, 1 white blue for a 2/2 with hexproof. When it attacks, you put a 4/4 white angel creature token with flying onto the battlefield, tapped and attacking, and you exile that token at the end of combat.
Yeah, this is fantastic in Vintage Cube. Frequently, you'll play against a lot of decks that are running few to no creatures, and this closes the game out in a hurry and is difficult to interact with from your opponent.
Yeah, Storm decks, combo decks have really hard times dealing with Geist. Dragonlord Atarka, 5 red-green for an 8/8 with flying and trample, and when it ETBs, it deals 5 damage divided as you choose among any number of target creatures and or planeswalkers your opponents control.
Yeah, good reanimate target and a good ramp target.
And a good, like, sneak attack target.
Ooh, and a good sneak attack target.
Baneslayer Angel, 3 white-white for a 5/5 with flying, first strike, lifelink, and surprisingly relevant protection from demons and from dragons.
Yeah, this card is good. I think main deckable in white decks and just absolutely crushes aggro decks out of the sideboard.
Avenger of Zendikar is our last card, 5 green green for a 5/5. At ETBs, you create a 0/1 green plant creature token for each land you control, and as landfall, when a land enters the battlefield under your control, you may put a +/+1 counter on each plant creature you control.
Yeah, this is a good finisher for the green decks, something you want to ramp into with lands ideally, because it gets better the number of lands you have on the battlefield. Like, a lot of times green decks try to cheat something in with, oh god, what's the name of it? The 2 green green card.
Natural Order.
Yeah, a lot of times green decks try to cheat something in with Natural Order. This is not what you want as your Natural Order target. You want to be casting this on like turn 4, turn 5 after you've accelerated a little bit.
This pack has me scratching my head, Ben. What did you end up doing here?
Yeah, there were no good options for me, I don't think, really, for what I had so far. I ended up on Geist of St. Traft and maybe drafting just like a normal blue-white deck. I thought it was the highest power level card there.
That makes sense to me. I might have been tempted by one of the big fatties here, given all the artifact ramp, but I think Geist is a responsible pick.
Moving on to pack 1, pick 7. So again, we don't really have direction. We've got artifact ramp, we've got some card draw and Thirst for Knowledge, High Tide as a storm, dipping our toe in storm, and then a Geist. So there's Mana Tithe, my arch nemesis, single white, instant counter target spell unless its controller pays 1.
Yeah, I mean, it's not in pod, so you probably don't hate draft this year.
Next, we've got Trigon Predator, 1 green blue for the 2/3 flyer, and it deals, whenever Trigon Predator deals combat damage to a player, you may destroy target artifact or enchantment that player controls.
Oh boy, is this a must-deal-with threat for most decks running powerful artifacts in this cube.
Next, we've got Beast Within, 2 and a green for an instant, destroy target permanent. Its controller creates a 3/3 green beast creature token.
This is sort of the other green removal spell in addition to Song of the Dryads that green has access to. Like, usually green can deal with a 3/3 beast, has tough time dealing with other permanents, so Beast Within is a nice catch-all.
I think this is our first fetch, Wooded Foothills. This is the red-green fetch land.
A fine card, but red-green is not a great archetype in my opinion, and we don't have any duels yet, so I wouldn't be super excited about it here, but fetch lands are the premium lands to take.
We're about to get some direction. Next, we've got Wildfire, 4 red-red for the sorcery. Each player sacrifices 4 lands, and Wildfire deals 4 damage to each creature.
Yeah, I mean, this is, in addition to being a pet card of yours and mine, it also goes great with the first three artifact mana that we have, and I would be really happy to grab it here.
Next, we've got Thalia, Garden of Thraben, one and a white for the 2/1 first strike, and non-creature spells cost one more to cast.
Sometimes awkward in a white aggressive deck, depending on like how many planeswalkers or sort of spell creatures you have, like Lingering Souls or Spectral Procession, but still a pretty good hoser for a lot of opposing decks.
Next, we've got Noxious Gearhulk, 4BB for the 5/4 menace. When it ETBs, you may destroy another target creature. If a creature is destroyed this way, you gain life equal to its toughness.
Yeah, this is a fantastic card. Again, like I said, there's a lot of these sort of 2-for-1 creatures that enter the battlefield and kill something. This is definitely one of the better ones. And it being an artifact is relevant in many ways in this cube, so don't sleep on that.
Mirari's Wake, speaking of some spice, this is 3GW for the enchantment. Creatures you control get +1/+1, and whenever you tap a land for mana, add 1 mana to your mana pool of any type that land produced.
Yeah, I mean, this is great with Storm, great with creating infinite mana with Palancron. It's got some pretty like spicy niche applications. I wouldn't often suggest folks to draft this right out the gate.
And last, we've got Force of Will, 3BB for the instant. You can pay 1 life and exile a blue card from your hand rather than pay Force of Will's mana cost and counter target spell.
Yeah, super powerful. It's really great to have permission in this format, and especially being able to tap out and protect your stuff is incredible.
Yeah, so snapped up Wildfire here and, you know, was thinking like, okay, I've got a plan now. Like, we're going to ramp. We're going to try to cast a Wildfire, clear the board, and have more mana left over than our opponent.
I will say that this cube draft has felt like a familiar experience of snapping up some like sweet artifact mana early and then not really seeing that like deck being open, you know, because there are a lot of cards, and I think in blue especially, that care about an abundance of artifacts, and not everyone wants them. Like, sometimes you'll see a Talarian Academy late, or you'll see a Mishra's Workshop late, that sort of thing. And we haven't really seen anything. So a Wildfire is a nice breath of fresh air, but I would maybe proceed with caution here too.
Frequently, that used to be like 3 or 4 years ago, you could just draft this deck every single time, and people are better at drafting cube now, and it's frequently not open as much.
Pack 1, pick 8, Nature's Claim, single green for an instant, destroy target artifact or enchantment, its controller gains 4 life.
A fine sideboard card, nothing special.
Terminate, black red for an instant, destroy target creature, it can't be regenerated.
Again, like fine in a control deck, but you're not prioritizing removal like this in cube, I don't think.
You had a flip card here, Nozomi Grave Robber, 1BB for a 2/1. You can pay 1BB to exile target card from an opponent's graveyard. If no cards are in that graveyard, flip Nozomi Grave Robber. So you have to like have a target to be able to use it the first time. And then once there's no cards, you can flip it. It becomes a 4/2, and you can pay 4BB to put target creature card from a graveyard into play under your control.
Yeah, a fine card. You might main deck it, you might not, but you're not going out of your way to pick it up.
Yeah, I feel like this never makes the cut for me. Silverblade Paladin, 1WW for a 2/2 with Soul Bond. When it ETBs, you can pair it with another creature, and as long as it's paired, both it and the creature it is soul bonded with have double strike.
Yeah, that will end games in a hurry in mono white, and is a fairly good 3-drop in that deck.
Phyrexian Revoker, 2 mana for a 2/1. When it ETBs, you name a non-land card. Activated abilities of sources with the chosen name can't be activated.
This is good in any aggressive deck and fine in a controlling deck. This is frequently going to make the cut in your decks and just does a lot for a 2-mana card in Vintage Cube, I think.
Important to note that this, unlike Sorcerer's Spyglass or Pithing Needle, this does shut off mana abilities.
Yes. And also, you don't get a look at their hand, so you need to know sort of what you're doing a little bit.
Right. But also, you know, you can also kind of guess when you play a card like this. Like, if you main deck this and you have to play this on turn 2, like, be smart about what you're picking. If you see a swamp, like, pick Liliana of the Veil. Don't just, like, pick anything at random or you know, I think you can make an educated guess. You may not end up having that be relevant, but I think it's worth doing. Grim Lavamancer, single red for a 1/1. You can pay red and tap it to exile 2 cards from your graveyard to shock something.
I think mono red only, most likely.
Mm-hmm. Or blue red spells. Awakening Zone, 2 green for an enchantment. At the beginning of your upkeep, you put a 0/1 colorless Eldrazi spawn creature token onto the battlefield. That spawn token has sacrifice this creature, add 1 mana to your mana pool.
This card looks terrible, but it actually does quite a bit. It's very good in a blue-green opposition deck. It's also like chump blocks forever. It stymies things like Worm Coil Engine to keep your opponent from gaining life. Like, you can block with the creature, sacrifice it so your opponent doesn't gain life. There's just tons of ways this card is relevant. I like this card a lot.
Yeah, I'm happy to hear you say that because I do too, but I always feel like I can't play this in Vintage Cube. It's too slow, but no, it can be good. Last card in the pack, Sword of Fire and Ice, going so late. 3 mana for an equipment, equip cost of 2. Equipped creature gets +2/+2 and has pro red and blue. And when equipped creature deals combat damage to a player, Sword of Fire and Ice deals 2 damage to target creature or player, and you draw a card.
Yeah, so this is like about a reasonable time for this sword to go. It's in the middle tier of equipment, like not super great, but if you're playing creatures, you'll want to pick it up. It's very powerful out of the sideboard. And that's actually what I ended up settling on here. I was getting a little nervous, like you said, about the lack of artifact mana, and I had been seeing like some steady white signals. So right at this point, I was thinking, okay, we're about to find out on the wheel if we're going to wheel Ravages of War. And I had seen some good white cards. We'd seen Spectral Procession. We'd seen Blade Splicer. We'd seen Thalia. So there were some mono white cards getting passed. I hadn't taken them because I was hoping to do some big artifact stuff. But I was taking the sword here as a hedge that maybe mono white might be open. And sword is definitely a card you want to play in mono white.
Well, let's find out what happens on the wheel.
So on the wheel, we did wheel Ravages of War, as well as Dragonlord Dromoka, Rishadan Port, Fire Blast, Kitesail Freebooter, Rexage, and Blink of an Eye. And I snapped up Ravages of War. So what that signaled to me was that, one, nobody was drafting white. Fire Blast wheeling signaled to me that nobody was drafting red. And Rishadan Port wheeling signaled to me that nobody at the table was either drafting a monocolored aggro deck or was really undervaluing Rishadan Port if they were.
The thing that excites me the most about taking Ravages here is that we know Armageddon is like 2 packs later. And if you can get both of those, that's really nice to be consistently able to fire those off on turn 4.
Yeah, and so what your mono white deck tries to do is it tries to run out creatures on 1, 2, and 3 and then destroy all lands and you just get a free win out of nowhere.
All right, pick 10. You get another mono white signal here with Banalish Marshall coming around, the white 3/3 anthem effect. And, you know, your inklings about mono red maybe being open are right with Monastery Swift Spear and Searing Spear still in the pack. Regrowth should absolutely not still be here, and Bone Shredder and Jace Bellerin as well.
Yeah, so snapped up Banalish Marshall and was like, all right, we're doing it, pivoting into mono white. We just need to wheel that Armageddon. And pack one, pick 11, we did wheel the Armageddon, snapped it up. There's also a Recruiter of the Guard, Urborg, Cast Down, and Jackal Pup. So mono red, wide open, as is typical in these Vintage Cube drafts a lot of the time as well. But we are firmly on the mono white train now.
And on the 12th day of Cubesmiths, you get your one drop, Legion Landing. You know, I think this is fine. You probably playable. Kind of an interesting interaction with the Geddens, like when to flip it or not, you know? Like, you can end up getting a land on turn 4 out of this if you go like one drop, two drop, three drop, and then Armageddon, and then flip it. That's kind of nice to have with the 2 destroy all land effects.
Yeah, and then went on the rest of this draft after getting those signals on the wheel to draft mono white, picked up Spectral Procession, pick 13, which was Gasoline, Blade Splicer, pick 14, and Mana Tithe, pick 15, and then just drafted mono white from there on out. I had found an open archetype that I was interested in drafting and went to town. I think I ended up 3-0-ing with this deck.
How do you remember that?
Because I went through all my draft logs, and it was the first cube draft I did this summer, and I kind of remember starting off with a 3-0.
Nice. All right, sweet. I can't believe we thought we were going to get through more than one of those for this episode.
I also cannot either. That took a while. But yeah. I think there was tons of good information in there. And I think that's a way we haven't looked at Cube yet. And I think it's a really valuable way, like, you know, maybe if you listen to some other Cube episodes, just to wet your feet and like go through a draft with us pick by pick without the Magic Online clock ticker ticking down on you.
Right. And I think it's really interesting that like almost every card in every pack, we had something to say about it. Well, this is where this goes, or if this were going this direction, we would maybe want this with X, Y, and Z. And, you know, very rarely was it like, nah, like blink of an eye, sad blink of an eye. Didn't really have much to say about that. But otherwise, those cards all have some home in this cube.
Yeah. Thank you, as always, to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give that a listen. And remember, we've got our 15-hour stream on December 26th. And by the time you hear this, it'll be the day after this episode comes out. It'll be Tuesday. This episode should release on Christmas Day. Merry Christmas to you all. And then you can hop in on Wednesday, the 26th, for our 15-hour stream. I'll be taking the first shift, and Ethan will be taking the second shift this time around. So be sure to come and hang out with us.
You can check out our Twitch streams during the 15-hour stream and many other days during the year. I'm at twitch.tv/LordTupperware. Ben is at twitch.tv/MrMetronome. We're both under those same usernames on Twitter, and you can tweet at the podcast at Lords of Limited.
If you've got any feedback about the show or any questions, feel free to shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Some additional content for you. Please check out our Lords of Limited showdown videos. We've got one for Guilds of Ravnica. We've got one for Ultimate Masters, both available for you on YouTube. You can also check out my latest article for Cardsphere, my 2019 limited resolutions. Thank you all so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode and the last episode of 2018 of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later. Next, we've got Polyke, World Eater, Pelucranos, 2GG for the 5/5 with Monstrous X, X with green double X for monstrosity. How do I even say that? So many X's.
It's only two.
No, it's X, it's XX green monstrosity X. Like, it's got, it's such an awkward thing to say. It's too many X's.
you'll get there. You'll make it through. I believe in you.
Okay. Pelucranos has Monstrosity X, so you can pay green and double X. And when what? I just got a straight face back. Come on, man.
I'm sorry. I just you the double X really threw me. Okay, I'm sorry. Would you say Bonfire of the Damned cost double X, red double X?
No. Oh, I'm crying. You're going to have to do this.
No, you got it.
Okay, hang on. I need a drink. I'll be back.